Work shouldn't feel like a drag, and you shouldn't have to sacrifice your soul for a job you love. Determined to rethink the future of work, she's out of her depth on purpose. With fresh ideas, interviews, and stories from her life on the road, meet Europe's newest digital nomad, Blair Palmer.
Hello, and welcome to episode 83 of A Brilliant Gamble. I hope you are really well. I am recording this in Italy. We've been driving through Italy for a couple of days. Before that, we were driving through France for a couple of days. We've spent a lot of time driving, but tomorrow we arrive in our house, our home for a month in Italy, just about half an hour's train journey from Rome. So we're hoping to spend a bit of time in Rome, but also, you know, just exploring the coastline around there and little towns and villages that we come across. I must say that even though I've been looking forward to Italy, I mean, for me, this is one of the highlights of the trip. I love Italy and I've been so excited to introduce Ivy to the country. Even though I've been looking forward to it, it has been a tough journey to get here. Driving in the heat is exhausting. We've had temperatures of close to 100 Fahrenheit, about 35, 36 centigrade. It's really, really hot and our aircon is, well, we don't really have aircon. And a lot of the driving is on motorways, which is very boring. And, you know, you get into a trance very quickly if you're not careful. And we are irritating each other a little bit. But I will tell you that the campsites that I've found on this leg of the journey have been really excellent. I'm using an app called Parkings, which is available in the iStore, and it's just brilliant for finding. It does have the sort of major campsites and things, but what it's really good for is free parking or low-cost motorhome parking pretty much anywhere in Europe for sure. And it's been brilliant. We've stayed places for free. Places for free that had amazing facilities, places for, you know, 10 euros a night, which is really, really good value compared to some of the big campsites that are 30 or 40 pounds for a night, which is a lot. Anyway, so I'm really, really pleased to recommend that to anyone who camps or caravans or motorhomes. Absolutely fantastic. Before I introduce my guest today, I also want to say hi to new listeners. The numbers listening to this podcast have been shooting up over the last few weeks, and I really, really appreciate it. To those of you who are sharing the podcast with people you know, please carry on. And those who are new and like it, please tell your friends. There are so many people who are at a crossroads seeking more alignment, more balance. In fact, it seems to be that pretty much everyone is at that kind of crossroads, except for people who've already faced that crossroads at some point in the past and already deliberately chosen a different path. So if this podcast can help you and help them take a brilliant gamble, then I will have done my job. I'll be delighted. Which brings me to today's show. When I was thinking about homeschool, and then when I started thinking about traveling, I turned to podcasts and I found Jason Jenkins and the Epic Education podcast. I listened every chance I got, and it was because of that podcast and a few others, I must say, that we got it together to set out on this trip. So it was a great thrill to get to talk to him. Something you'll see that surprised him, my enthusiasm for talking to him, my starstruckness, slightly confused him, I think. But anyway, it was really great to talk to him and find out more about the realities of their life on the road and how they find a balance between all of their individual needs. Finding balance has got to include other people who matter to you. And this is the most challenging part of the whole balance equation, I think. And it's something that's very much on my mind at the moment. So it doesn't matter if world travel with your family or homeschooling, both of which we talk about in this interview, are part of your plans or not. I hope what you'll get from today's show is an insight into how one family is trying to make it work for everyone without any individual having to make massive sacrifices for that to happen. With that in mind, let's go over to the interview.
Jason, it is fantastic to have you on the show. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Fantastic to be here. Thanks for having me.
I've got to admit, I'm a little bit starstruck. I'm quite a fan.
I don't know why.
Well, the thing is that, you know, for months before we decided to embark on our journey, I was looking for information and reassurance that it was going to be okay. Right. And the thing is about your podcast and your website and all of that is that it was exactly, you know, for a traveling family, educating on the road. And it was just perfect. And I used to listen to back-to-back episodes of your podcast in the car, wow, fantasizing about where we go and what we have to do. And of course, some of your guests on your show have now been on my show. So World Towning,
great.
I heard them on your show and now they've been on mine. And so, yeah, it was a huge support for me, actually, at the beginning.
Well, that's very sweet of you to say, and I apologize for the little outburst of laughter. No one has ever said they were starstruck by meeting me. I'm thrilled that I was able to help you. Absolutely. Oh, that makes me feel better. Sometimes I feel like I'm speaking into the void, and so when I do hear from listeners, it feels good.
Yeah, I think it's important, too, because, you know, whatever crossroads you're at, it's a very lonely, it can be a very lonely place. And chances are, in your own circle, you don't really know anyone who's doing what you're doing, particularly if you're going to do something quite brave and quite kind of unconventional. So when you do find a community out there and you can connect with them, I think that it gives you not just practical advice, but the sort of the bravery of knowing you're not on your own.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. It's one of the reasons I started the podcast in the first place was when we went out, I didn't find anything like that. And I was looking so many people helped us through various Facebook groups or just other family travelers that we met along the way. And I just thought, well, then maybe if I put something out there that could help. It was my way of kind of giving back to the people who had helped us in our kind of initial phases of kind of stepping out. So great. I'm glad. Let the circle be unbroken. I'm glad that it was able to kind of pass it on. So great.
Well, let's go back then. Let's go back to how you became a traveling family, because my understanding is you had traveled before you had family. So that aspect of it was not new. But what was it that, was there a trigger for saying, actually, we can do this even though we have kids?
Well, yeah, there's a whole story. I had been sort of out of my home country for over a decade before we decided to kind of travel as a family. I left the States in 1997. And had lived in Taiwan for about 3 years, and then had lived in Japan for about 13 years. At that time, I was married. My kids were born in Tokyo, where my wife and I both worked. And we, I guess the catalyst or the impetus, it wasn't a sort of a flash of inspiration. It was something I'd wanted to do for a long time. I mean, we did the occasional family vacation from Japan to places in, you know, in Southeast Asia before, but just the way other people do, you know, a week backpacking, where, you know, or staying in a hotel in Bali or something like that. But I wanted to do something bigger, and I realized that the work I was doing, I worked at an ad agency. I was just a glorified copywriter, really. I mean, I did some kind of fun stuff with photo shoots, but 90% of my job was desk work. It was, you know, it was working on brochures and just editing Word documents and editing PowerPoint presentations for my boss. And so at some point, probably leaving some part of this out, but at some point I just started to tell my wife, I said, you know, why don't we go? And she was not as keen because her work was not something she could do that she could do online or abroad. And she did not work for a company that would have sympathized with that. But I worked on her a bit because we just didn't see our kids anymore. We worked very long jobs. I'm sure that you and your listeners probably understand this. We referred to ourselves as tag team single parents, meaning that, okay, so it's Monday, I come home, pick up the kids, fix them dinner, put them in bed, Keiko comes in, Keiko being my wife, Keiko comes in at 11 o'clock, and then, okay, now it's Tuesday. She goes and picks up the kids and fixes some dinner, puts them to bed, and I come in at 11 o'clock. And then we often work through weekends, and then just the stress of those kinds of things. And then there was the other element of that. Our kids were bicultural. They were being raised in a pretty homogenous working class Japanese neighborhood, which was nothing wrong with it. They were had loads of friends, and everybody loved them, and we had a great community around us, but it was insular. And what I mean by that is, I'm talking to you in the UK, is that right?
Yes, I am at the moment. Yeah.
Okay, so I'm sure that there are people from this one village who only talk about that one village. Their life doesn't go beyond that. You can find that in the United States. You can find that in Japan. And where we were, even in the middle of cosmopolitan Tokyo, we were on the east side in a sort of a working class neighborhood, we just weren't around worldly people, and we could see that our kids were not getting that exposure. So we had talked for a long time. We both loved to travel. My wife and I had traveled a lot before kids, before marriage. We thought, well, let's, we'll do this when the kids graduate from high school. And the more I saw as my kids were developing, I realized I wanted it to happen earlier than that. And eventually I got to my wife. I convinced her. I think, layoffs in her industry were part of the impetus. She was working at a bank, and this is a couple of years after the Lehman crash. And so it was getting closer and closer to her. So she decided she'd go for it. And eventually we did. I convinced my job to, I convinced my boss to let me work online, and there's a whole story with that. But a truncated version of it is that essentially I told him, I said, cut my salary in half, and now you don't have to pay health insurance or anything. Cut my salary in half and give me 6 months to prove that I can do 90% of my job without being here. And they let me do it, and then they let me keep doing it for about 2.5-3 years of the past 5 years. So that's what I was working for them online for all that time.
So that's fantastic, and I love this pressure, this slight gentle pressure that, that you put on your wife. Did a part of you think, well, is it just me that wants to go, and that actually, because sometimes I feel like that. I feel like, actually, it's just me that wanted to go. My daughter was happy to tag along, but it was my dream, my need to go. And I'm quite convincing. And so I managed to make it seem very attractive. Right. Was there any, and I know that people struggle with that. They say, well, there's all of us in this together. Why should what I want to do mean that my husband or my wife has to make compromises? Maybe they have to work harder, or maybe they have to be the sole breadwinner for a while I pursue my passion. Is that really fair? Was there any of that? Is there ever any of that for you?
Yeah, I guess if I'm honest with myself, this was my dream. My wife also dreamed of traveling with the kids, but like many people do, it was more of once we have a massive nest egg, once they're grown, once we're established. And I think the way I convinced her was because there was the specter of redundancies and layoffs coming in her direction. And at the same time, she loves her kids, and she just wasn't able to see them as much as she wanted to. And we also, because we're a bicultural family, our kids were struggling with some identity issues that may be unique to those kinds of situations. Our kids look like me. I'm, for podcast listeners, I'm a Caucasian man, very, very, lily white dude. And my wife is Japanese, and my kids look like me. They were freckle faced little kids. And they looked different, and they didn't know where they fit in. And I kind of wanted to show them that there's all sorts of people all over the world. And so that was another part of it. But I'm trying to get. Let me see if I can answer your question though. As I guess part of this is that this was not on the kids' radar at all. In fact, my son was just starting to break through. He was the only, you know, kid of his kind in the neighborhood. So literally we would walk out of a store and some kids would ride by on a bicycle and wave to him. And I'd say, who are they? He says, I don't know. I mean, he was like the big man on campus. I mean, big man being 11-year-old. So pulling him out of this was another question mark, because he had sort of just turned a corner and being sort of the cool kid instead of worried about looking different. But then, you know, we get on the road and we discovered that there are loads of families traveling around. There are loads of local kids that are everywhere we went. Our kids have made friends and keep in contact with people all over. They don't as much as some traveling families we know. I know some families, their kids talk on Skype or through Minecraft. My son has a couple core people he does that with, and so does my daughter, but they prefer more face-to-face interaction, and they've found that. My son, through soccer or football, he's played on footy teams in 6 different countries. My daughter, through whatever classes that we can find her in, she likes dance and theater, so we plug her into dance and theater classes wherever we go. But to circle back to your question, no, this was me. This was me pushing for this and kind of convincing my family that it needed to happen. And it hasn't been all sunshine and rainbows. We've had some serious ups and downs and some questions on if we were going to stop. And I'm sure that at some point this may come up in the interview, but you know, we've been sort of on the road, slow traveling as it were. We've been doing that for almost 5 years. On September 1st, it'll be exactly 5 years. And our kids are teens and tweens now. And my son's 15, my daughter's 12, and they're tired of moving around. They want to stay in one place. And so for the past 9 months, we've been looking for that place, the place that we could possibly stay until high school graduation, college time, or whenever they want to kind of go out. But they want their own crew. They want to know that they're going to see the same people. But at the same problem they want people who get them. And I say get with quotes around it. And that's hard to find, because many of the places we've lived, we've encountered great kids, great community, but it might not be as worldly. So when they talk about different places, the kids might not know about it or be interested. So that's one of the things that we've been in the process of doing.
Yeah, I mean, I do want to dive into this a little bit, because, you know, when you're looking at, well, how can we, you know, you're thinking to yourself, there's this very conventional way of living, and that's what everyone I know or most people that I know are doing, but it's not working for us. And it's probably not working for them in a lot of ways either, but, you know, my business is me and my family. So you're thinking, what am I going to do about that? And you come up with your plan, you come up with your idea. I think a lot of people think, well, this is a one-way ticket. You know, I have to have it all planned up in advance. I need to know exactly how this is going to play out over the next 10 years as my kids are growing up. You know, once we've made our commitment, there's no turning back. And what I'm learning, and I'm really interested in going into this in a bit more detail with you, is that it isn't that at all. That when you embark, you have some ideas and you think you know how it's going to be, but you're constantly tweaking and adapting as you go, right?
Absolutely. Our system has changed in multiple ways. Where, you know, the places we've traveled, the way we've educated the kids, you know, the way we've worked, all of those things was not necessarily as planned. When we left 5 years ago, I mean, the idea was 2 months in each place, 2 months here, 2 months there, 2 months there, and then just move like that. That lasted 6 months. You know, we went three times and realized very quickly that 2 months was way too fast for us and way too fast for the kids. They were just starting to meet other kids, and then so then we went straight from, you know, 2 months in Taiwan, 2 months in Malaysia, 2 months in Thailand, to going back to Malaysia and staying for an entire year, which was better. But then eventually we got itchy feet. We didn't know if we wanted to stay there for longer, and so we moved on. And so, I mean, I could elaborate on all of these details, but almost every aspect has changed in one way. I mean, we started out as teaching them homeschooling, as in school and home. I mean, it's 8 o'clock, let's do English, and it's 9 o'clock, let's do math. And then we went to radical unschooling. If your listeners are familiar, unschooling is like totally letting the kids do everything. And that didn't really work for us either. And then we kind of found a happy medium between those. And then, fast forward a year and a half, and we moved to Spain, and we popped the kids into local schools in Spain for 2 years. And then after that, we go back to homeschooling. So it's an improvisation the entire way for us so far. I mean, we try to plan as well as we can. And my wife is not an improviser. She is, you know, the, what is it, the 7 P's, the proper prior planning prevents its poor performance, or something like that. I mean, that's her motto, and she wants to plan ahead, as far ahead as possible, as much as possible. And we do when we can, but sometimes we have to wing it.
How hard is it, and maybe it isn't for you, to let go of the way that you had expected it to be and adapt your plans? And, you know, because I'm struggling a little with that myself, that, you know, to let go of what I thought we were going to be doing this year and do it a different way. You know, there's a lot of ego tied up in wanting it to be a certain way. Is it? Do you find that difficult to let go and adapt from there?
Yeah, well, there's a multifaceted answer to that, and I'll try to explain that as best I can. There are certain aspects that I can totally let go. Oh, all right, so we're going to leave here. Woohoo! Where are we going next? That's great. But then there are other aspects of when I've been working on this thing for the blog forever. I know this is what's going to come some sort of income to keep us going, and it totally doesn't work at all, and then I have to start over. I really struggle with that. But then other aspects of where, when it comes to the actual travel, I'm more than happy to improvise and move around. But when it comes to things that I've worked hard on and tried to create, I struggle with that a lot. And then parenting as well. I mean, I think I was expecting that I was going to have these, I'm exaggerating now, but just have these completely cultured, wise beyond their years, quadrilingual, you know, uber kinder, you know. And my kids are amazing, but when they don't, when they haven't, when they, but they're still kids. They still act like kids. They still do the same kinds of things that kids do that have never left their hometown their entire life. And sometimes when that happened, I've struggled with that. I'm like, I brought you out into this world so that you wouldn't be like that, or that, so to avoid that. But I've had to roll with that, and I've had to learn to accept that, you know, certain things are hardwired, certain things are just going to happen as they happen. So I've had problems with that. My wife is much better about, she's very stoic in the classic sense of that. Nothing riles her, nothing, you know, nothing moves her. She, you know, oh, suddenly we have to change all of this. I mean, she gets irritated when things don't work out, but she can move forward where I may sometimes hold on to what I think should be happening. And when there is no should, right? You know, there is just is, you know, without trying to sound pretentious or heavy. And I've struggled with that for sure.
It's so true. And I think the difficulty as well is that it's a very intense way of living. I mean, we travel very fast compared with you. And that's because we only ever plan to do this for a year. And we will only do it for a year. So I want to make sure we see some of the world, you know.
Sure.
And the faster we travel, the more stressful it is. And the more intense it is for us as a family. And when you're in that place of it feeling very intense, it's hard for you to be philosophical. So I I've told listeners about this already, but I only had a bit of a breakthrough about, oh, I've got to change this a bit. We've got to slow down a bit. When I had a few hours to myself, you know, going somewhere without my daughter for 24 hours, that's when I had just enough headspace to say, oh, you're holding on really tight to something.
Oh, yeah. Long walks for me. Long walks. Everywhere we go, one of the first things I do, and this is, I needed this long before we started traveling. That was kind of, where am I going to be able to walk in for what it was before, whether it's a freelance writing assignment or some personal project or whatever, or to just kind of get my head screwed on straight. I need a place to walk. I don't know how much this relates, but you know the boxer Mike Tyson, right?
Yeah.
He is at least credited with one thing that I remember sometimes. He said, everybody has a plan until they get punched in the face. And my wife can get that punch in the face and then keep moving forward with the plan, where I stand there and shake my head and kind of, I have to kind of get over it. It takes me longer to recover when something doesn't work out exactly as I had imagined it. And that's where the long walks come in.
Such good advice. And I think, you know, a lot of this, it applies no matter what your circumstances. I mean, we all live pretty intense lives, and there's not very much, as you said, the sort of tag team single parenting, there's not very much time to stop and reflect, whether you're traveling or not, you know, whether you're going through some massive change in your life or not. And so, yeah, that opportunity to step away and get your head together a little, just to see things with a bit of perspective.
Sure.
So important. So let me ask you something else. I mean, you mentioned about your wife being more of the sort of organized and planning person. How important have you found it, even though it's not so much in your DNA, to get some routine going? Because I'm really in two minds about this. I really, in one way, want to flow, you know, from thing to thing and allow my intuition to choose. And on the other hand, I find that quite stressful, and I want everything to be planned out, and I kind of swing from one thing to another. What given that you've lived in so many different circumstances over these years and before you had family, what have you got any sort of advice about that?
Now, let me make sure I understand the question. When you say the importance of routine, are you talking about just your normal daily routines, or are you talking about the sort of when traveling, having some sort of planned out itinerary?
I think it more about day-to-day routine, because, of course, when you're traveling, you have a different routine.
Right.
Those days or weeks, depending where you're going, are gonna have the routine of their own. But have you found it important to, even though your life circumstances change every 6 months or every year or however long it is that you're in a place, to establish a bit of a routine, or are you more free for all?
I am by nature, or at least nature, nurture, whatever it is, I want to be a free for all. And I am married to a planner. We are whatever the sort of, we're opposites in many ways. And I have failed to prove the value of improvisation. Let me just put it that way. I'm always like, come on, let's just go with the flow and blah, blah, blah. And it's blown up in our faces many times. I mean, there's been many times where something beautiful and serendipitous has come out of it. We've had a great experience and we found a great hotel. And I'm talking in a large scale, like in a travel context. But there's been a lot more times where we've ended up having to pay a lot more because I didn't book something ahead because I wanted to just kind of see what happens. There's a lot of times where we've missed a train or we've missed some opportunity because I didn't commit to something in time. And so against everything that my mind and my soul and my body or whatever you want to say, feel should be true. And there's that word again, should. I have been proven wrong more than I've been proven right in that there should be some sort of planned out thing. Now, when you talk about daily routines, when we don't move around. Like I said before, we started at 2 months, 2 months, 2 months, but then we lived in a place for a year. Then we lived in Spain for 2 years. Now we've been in Mexico for 9 months. We've been in one apartment in central Mexico for about the last 6 months. I do believe that daily routines help. However, I still struggle with them. My entire family is better at it than I am, but the whole idea of getting up, going to the gym, coming home, meditating, getting this particular task, which for me as a blogger means social media, answering comments and all of that, and then moving on to the next task, I find that when I keep that, I just get more done and I feel more accomplished. But I still struggle with it. I stray with it. All it takes is one new thing happening. Right now, that new thing would be the World Cup. my son is a footy fanatic, and so we all of these different games at different times have thrown off my rhythm. But as far as daily routines, I find that in my life and in my family's life, it makes things a lot easier. And even in travel situations, we move to a new town. If we do this being seek out the supermarket, seek out the essentials on the very first day, even if you're jet lagged. When we do that, everything runs a lot smoother instead of, I'll do it tomorrow kind of thing. Now, in contrast, I know lots of other travelers and traveling families who the god of serendipity or whatever shines on them all the time. They never plan things ahead. They still get the cheap flights. They still find amazing things all the time. And I would love to be those people, but I have realized that in our family, it works a lot better to plan out as much as the inner child inside me is pushing against it. Did that answer your question?
Yeah. And I love it so much because it sounds so much like me. We always arrive, we were in Mexico last November, and we just missed Day of the Dead. Like, if I'd have any wit about me to look into what's a good time to go to Mexico, we would have been there and it would have been an amazing experience. And of course, I didn't do that. And that does seem to happen all the time. Oh, there's this amazing music festival in this city that we're staying in the week after we leave. It's all the time. So I get it. I think you have to know what, not so much, I mean, partly what kind of person you are, but what kind of luck you have. And if you're,
right.
My sister will win any raffle, any lottery that she wins.
Right.
Just like
what
that.
Is it with those people, huh? Yeah.
So she will be able to do the kind of, seat of your pants thing, but I am not like that.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the education piece. I don't talk that much on this show about homeschool.
Okay. It's
not really the theme of the show, although there is something, a thread for me running through everything that we're doing, and homeschool fits very much into that, which is about trying to break from conventional habitual ways of living and thinking and creating a life of your own. And for me, the education system, most education systems are quite narrow in terms of what they think of as success, how they measure skill and talent and what counts and what doesn't. So, and then I think that sets you up for a particular kind of life afterwards. But that's my feeling, my philosophy. For you, what drives the, obviously homeschool allows you to travel, so that it's practical. But what else drives your desire to educate the kids in a different kind of way?
Well, let me start by just mentioning something. In one of my earliest interviews, a friend of mine named Clark, a guy I met when we were living in Malaysia, when I was asking him about, you know, why they homeschool or what, you know, why, you know, about their education choices, he said something that stuck with me and was really the goal I want. He says, "I just want resourceful kids." And I defined resourceful kids as knowing, you know, understanding what they know, understanding what they don't know, and then leveraging those two to get what they want in life. If you want to be a doctor, what do you have to do to be a doctor? If you have a passion for painting, how can I make myself happy being painting? You know, that's beyond book smarts. That's beyond, a lot of the platitudes that people put up about higher education and about homeschooling and, you know, and unschooling and all that, because with all due respect to many of the people I've met, there's just not one system for everybody. There isn't. And the people who insist that you must go to conventional schools are wrong, just like some of the, you know, the people who insist that the entire school system is broken and we should all just homeschool. I think that's a little misguided as well. Now, to our own educational choices, we chose homeschooling partly because of just the practicality of it, because we wanted to be able to travel. Also because our kids were in one of those fairly confined school systems. They were in Japanese public schools in Tokyo, which are like schools in probably in the UK, definitely in the United States. We discovered also in Spain, where it's still a quick consumption and regurgitation of facts. It's not critical thinking. It's not resourcefulness. It's just, you know, it's testing on how well you can memorize patterns or memorize different things. And I think that's going to be a problem with schools globally for a long time. But at the same time, something that if your listeners are considering homeschooling, I think you really need to think about, you need to have, you know, establish a philosophy. And now I'm actually quoting Jennifer Miller, a brilliant, fantastic traveling mom and homeschooler who, if you really want to look to someone for that, don't look to me, look to her. Jennifer Miller talked about, you know, establishing a philosophy of what you believe and then acting on that. And our philosophy has changed over time. But you also need to factor in time, because homeschooling takes time. It may take a lot of time with one kid. It may not take as much time with another kid. But one of the things that we did not realize, we knew it was going to take time, but we had no idea how much. And we're trying to travel. We're trying to work. And then we're also now responsible for everything for our kids' education. That's one of the reasons we tried unschooling. We thought we'll just let them lead and let them do it. It didn't work, and I can elaborate on that if you want. But we had to figure out a way, because we do feel like we want college to be an option if they want it. And you have to be able to pass tests to get into college, and so we wanted our kids to be at that level. So we've gone back and forth, and we put a lot of time into working with our kids. It's easier when they're younger because they're learning, you know, simple arithmetic. But when they get into their teens and they're getting into, you know, to geometry and calculus and trigonometry and into books that you haven't read in 30 years, it takes a lot of preparation. And unless you have some sort of automated system where you're making money without having to put a lot of time in front of a screen or however else, you really have to factor that in. And, you know, a lot of it can be done through online programs, but you have to be there as a facilitator. And that was a that was a major issue for us for a while. Then when we put the kids in local schools, is that okay? Is that the direction you want me to go? So, you know, the first 2 years of our travel were all homeschooling, and these were kind of some of the roadblocks we came up. I was still working a full-time, you know, a full-time 40-hour job online and trying to get our blog off the ground. The podcast hadn't started yet. Then we moved to Spain, and we put the kids in local schools. None of us spoke Spanish at all, zero. I mean, it counts 20, and order food. So we put them in schools there for multiple reasons. The one of them was that they were already starting to feel that sort of, you want to kind of fulfill your kids' social needs. We also wanted them to learn another language. And then we also wanted some time to ourselves. I mean, we had been for almost 2 years had been in the same, you know, small apartment in one or hotel in one place or another for 2 years. And they needed a little time away from us. We needed a little time away from them. And that gave us the space to work while they were learning and making friends. Then, you know, then we get back on the road and we change things up a little. But as far as our philosophy, it's changed multiple times. Homeschooling works really, really well with our 12-year-old. It works less well with our 15-year-old, even though he does well. He doesn't like it. He wants to be back, you know, with classmates and teammates. And so we have to fulfill that. And he also sort of, he likes things when they're sort of placed in front of him and said to do this, where our daughter is much more of, I'm going to go in, that she plans her day, where, you know, and is this part of his personality? Is this because he was in school systems for a longer time and had things fed to him? Or is it both? Is it neither? I don't know. But all I know is that this is the way things are now. And so we have to constantly make adjustments. And so what we're doing now is we're seeking out schools here in Mexico. And we live in a town called San Miguel de Allende. If you've never heard of it, Google it. It's beautiful. It's amazing. And there's a great sort of, you know, expat's a loaded word, but like a non-Mexican traveler, international resident community. There are some school options here, conventional and unconventional. So we've been looking at some of those. Our son had already made friends at one of them. Our daughter made some at another. We're also looking back at Japan. We've been gone for 5 years. Our son feels a desire to go back. My son's actually in Tokyo right now with my wife. He's applying to one school in Tokyo right now, which is a total long shot if he gets in it. One of those, you know, five slots, 50 applicants kind of place. And if that doesn't work, we'll look at some other options. But we're just trying to meet his needs. He's, you know, in 3 or 4 years, he's going to probably be out on his own. And so we want him to be best prepared for that. So this is a circuitous way of answering your question, but we started out with this one idea that has changed and evolved multiple times, and it could be completely different for you. I've met some kids that did school in a box, you know what I mean, like where basically you get a whole curriculum and you just do it just like you're at school, and have loved it. I've met some other kids who were miserable. I've met some kids who were I guess whatever it's called, you know, not radically unschooled, but unschooled where they completely followed their own thing, their own life, and you're going to read about them one day because they're going to do something amazing. And then I've met other unschooled kids who have never been told that they've done anything wrong and are being set up for disaster. It depends on your kid's personality and their needs. And a lot of times if you have multiple children, you're going to have multiple sets of needs. They're not going to need the same thing, as we have discovered.
Yeah. I mean, I think in a way that's the point, that the conventional school system can't adapt to all of those different needs and expectations and preferences. Having said that, it's really difficult as a parent too, and it changes over time. So yes, what might really work well for the kid when they're 12 doesn't necessarily, and you think, oh, this is great. We found the perfect way. We're going to do this. And then, you know, 6 months down the line or 2 years down the line, you can't do it that way. And that brings me to something. I mean, we touched on it before, and we talked about the differences between you, your wants and needs and your wife's. But one of the challenges of creating a more blended life where you're not making massive sacrifices in one area of your life to deliver a success in another area, is that it's not just your own needs.
Correct.
You know, so if I could completely design my life the way that I want it without taking into account anyone else's needs, it would look a particular way. But I have aging parents. I have a sister who's doing all the caring of them at the moment and making massive sacrifices to do that. I've got a daughter who wants a bedroom of her own, a bit like your kids. She wants to have a home, and she wants to have a social life, which she doesn't have when we're traveling.
Sure.
And that there's a certain amount of frustration about that, because it might mean sacrificing or having to moderate what I want. It does mean that. How have you found, and I mean, I know it's a constantly moving thing and constantly changing thing, but how have you found a way to kind of bring together everybody's needs so that no one's having to, or have you found a way to do that so that no one is having to completely subsume their own desires for another family member or for everyone else?
That is a very difficult question to answer, because we're constantly struggling with that. I mean, we've moved around to try to meet various needs over time. I would not say that we're a total democratic house where we totally have to all be, and I'm talking more parents and children than my wife and I. My wife and I pretty much have to be on the same page, or it's just not it's just not good for either of us. You know, when I convinced her to move on as my dream, it was also hers as well. I don't think we could have lasted 5 years if this was just something that I wanted to do. Unfortunately, because we, you know, think things change and over time, you know, we've had to kind of make some changes. You know, to be honest, I would have been happy to have stayed in Southeast Asia for the rest of my life. I love, you know, living in places like Indonesia and Malaysia, Thailand, those kind of places. I love the lifestyle. I like living in shorts and flip-flops every day, all year. You know, I want to be in somewhere warm all the time. However, you know, at one point, my son had been playing on football teams, you know, soccer teams in all these different countries. He was pretty good. And we wanted our kids to learn another language. And so that's why one of the reasons we made the move to Spain, so that we could sort of see where he could go with that. And he did. He tried out. He made it onto a third division soccer team, did it for the 2 years we were there. The needs to come to Mexico dealt with sort of, aging parents as well. I was trying to see if this might be a place. My hometown's is Atlanta, which is a short plane ride from most of Mexico. That, at least that's why we started off in the Yucatan Peninsula. We were in Yucatan for about three months, which is just a few hour flight, from Atlanta. As far as the needs and desires, that's a constant, it's just like education, because needs and desires are changing all the time. And that's sort of the place we are now, because, I know that my son wants to return to Japan. I know that my wife doesn't want to return to Japan, but thinks we should return to Japan, just for financial reasons as well. You know, we make a certain amount of money, but we can go back and pick up work in Japan without too much trouble. I know that my daughter is thriving here in Central Mexico, and that it would be a struggle for her to start again in Japan. So it's a constant thing that I have to think about, and it can be challenging when the needs are completely going in opposite directions. I've been sort of stuck in between. I love it here, I love it there. But a lot of our decisions, Keiko and I have to be on the same page. And in a lot of ways, we brought the kids along. I know that some traveling families basically say, kids, where do you want to go? We haven't done that. Spain's about the closest thing we've done to that. Maybe we should have, maybe we haven't, but we always are thinking of what is in their best interests. And, you know, why we left Spain for Mexico, why we left Malaysia for Spain, why we stopped traveling 2 months and stayed to a year, all of that was for the benefit of our family, was for the benefit of our well-being and our sort of, you know, the sort of relationships that we'd built. And we talk with the kids as much as possible on they want, what makes them happy or unhappy. They're pretty good about telling us what they like and don't like, and or what they want to happen and what their expectations are. So you have to leave those lines of open communication, but that doesn't necessarily, in our family, doesn't mean that I'm going to totally turn the ship around. Because for example, the kids want to go back to Spain. They did not want to leave Spain. But we, for a variety of reasons I can elaborate, we decided that that was the best option for our family. And if I told the kids that we'd move back to Valencia tomorrow, they would pack their bags right now. They loved it there. It's where they went to school. That's where they made friends. But there was reasons we needed to move on, and that was a hard decision and was very rough for them. But we also explain to them why things need to happen, and that sort of open communication as best you can. I mean, we're not the best at it. I'm no guru at family communication. I just do it the best I can. But that's what we've done.
So, I mean, there's a lot, I think, for people to take away from this interview, no matter what their circumstances. But I'm really curious as we kind of draw to a close. I don't really want to stop talking to you, but we've both got lives, you know, we have to live. Overall, you know, with all the ups and downs and all the different experiences that you've had, has this adventure changed you? And if so, in what ways?
Oh, wow. Okay. That's a heavy one. I think, oh, absolutely. It's changed all four of us in a lot of ways. I'll start with the kids, and, you know, at least one way, you know, our original, you know, objective was for our kids to kind of go out into the world, confront their own identities and see who they are in the world, and become more confident and more resourceful. Mission accomplished. Especially with our son, when we left, he was very reserved and very sort of closed-minded because his friends were, in a ways, and I'm not trying to put them down. I mean, these were just kids who didn't know anything, and their parents didn't know anything beyond the neighborhood where they live. We're not talking about Japan. We're not talking about Tokyo. We're talking about Monzen Nakacho, like this tiny neighborhood. You know, that was the way their lives revolved. Our kids broke out into the world. They're much more gregarious and confident in themselves and proud of who they are. That was another issue, was that at one point our son was kind of ashamed of me because I totally looked different than everybody around us. He walked like six paces in front of me to school in the morning. This is, you know, 5 years ago, 6 years ago. Now he's very proud of being, you know, having an American, you know, a parent from the United States and a parent from Japan. He's equally proud. He He also is super charming with little, with 5-year-old girls and with 85-year-old ladies. He can haggle in a market. He can get a lower price in a hotel. Our daughter also has sort of come into her own as far as they, I just totally trust them in a lot of situations that I didn't think they could handle here. How has it changed me and Keiko? Well, maybe this goes back to what you were asking earlier. I've had to accept that things have to be a little more regimented and planned and premeditated to work in my life. I still have friends who fly by the seat of their pants and seem to have the best adventures and still, are really, really thriving that way. But it just hasn't worked for our family. And so I've had to instigate more discipline in my life to get things done. It's maybe miss home. And when I say home, I mean Japan. And I don't mean to sound pretentious, but I spent 13 years there. And I sort of remember the things that I like about it and have wondered about spending more time there. It's changed a lot of, just preconceived notions. I mean, just say the word Mexico to people and the images that they conjure up are so, so far from the truth. Being able to kind of have that perspective has been very, very helpful. I could go on and on, but a lot of it is just sort of having, an appreciation for things I didn't appreciate before, and sort of a newfound respect for people that we've met along the way.
Well, Jason, that's fantastic. And I think that, no matter what, even if you make the biggest mistake, even if you find yourself at a crossroads and you take the road less traveled and you realize after a few paces that this is not for us, you've learned something, haven't you? You've learned something really vital that you wouldn't have learned any other way.
Yeah. And I would, I would just add that, that idea, a lot of times when people look to travel in the media, whether it be a blog or an Instagram feed or whatever, there is this sort of this mood or this command, this imperative, just go, and it'll all work out. I'm here to tell you, no, don't just go, plan it, definitely go, but don't just go. Don't leave dishes in the sink and your bank account in disarray. Plan it, but like put it on paper and work towards it. And then it can happen and it'll be great.
That's wonderful. Jason, it's been such a thrill to talk to you. And I hope that whatever you decide to do next, wherever you decide to go, you carry on sharing your experiences in your podcast and in your blog and helping people like me to make these bold choices in our lives.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
Oh, I love Jason's admission that it takes a bit more organization to make life work than he'd like, but that bit of planning and forethought actually leads to more freedom in the rest of his life. I've noticed that myself. When we don't do the planning just a little bit, when we don't do that little bit of planning in advance, it's very stressful and we don't get to see the things that we want to see and do the things we want to do. But that little bit of upfront planning makes all the difference. Do check him out. It's the Epic Education podcast. So that's anepiceducation.com. That's their website. And you can just search Epic Education podcast on iTunes. Do check them out. Do follow them on all the social media. And definitely do listen to his interviews on his show. He's got some great, great families doing some amazing experiences, amazing adventures together. So it will inspire you, I'm sure. Do also stay in touch with us. I'm not going to repeat all the ways you can stay in touch with us. There are millions of ways. Instead, I'm going to hand that over to the lovely and delightful Ivy Palmer.
We love- to hear from you, you can get all the episodes of this show, plus read the blog and find out more about our travel adventure at www.brilliantgamble.com. Sign up to the newsletter and get an advance notice of classes and programs Mummy is running. Plus, you can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Brilliant Gamble. Finally, please leave a review and star rating for this podcast on iTunes, as it helps people find us and take a brilliant gamble of their own.